Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Sunil Kumar, who is co-founder and CEO of Ground Truth, which is a longtime innovator in location intelligence. So we talked to Sunil from our studio in San Francisco about the trends he's tracking and the best practices he's exercising. So here's our discussion with Sunil. So Sunil, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Love to be here.
Yeah, we'll have some fun with this. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into some of the things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with a quick intro for you and Ground Truth for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, awesome. About me, well, I grew up in India and came to Silicon Valley to work for Cisco Systems during the 90s. Mm. The market was pretty hot back then. And honestly, in India, I had a fascination to work for Cisco, but when I came here, it died pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I was 22 years old, didn't really like the environment, and then pretty quickly decided to go for further studies and end up going to New Hampshire.
Hmm.
And, you know, quite a transition from 100 degrees in Delhi to negative 20 in Durham, New Hampshire.
I grew up in New England, so I know that well.
Awesome. Yeah. Good to have somebody that knows that place.
Yep.
You know, over there, a good experience, kicked around a few ideas with a couple of friends, and then co-founded VNable, which is really similar to what Siri is today, but we were only 10 years ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that followed up with Ground Truth, which used to be known as XSAT, that you know. So that's about me. About Ground Truth, really, we created Ground Truth to understand consumers' behavior coming from foot traffic. We really wanted to understand the relationship between people and places they visit. And the timing was pretty good in 2009 when we started Ground Truth, because this was also aligning with explosion on mobile devices, and GPS technology was getting really, really good. So there is a lot of availability of location data. Fast forward, today we have built a variety of solutions. But the one that we really focus on most is offline intent marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
For merchants, you know, supporting all segments, SMBs, as well as larger brands, as long as they are in a neighborhood and looking to kind of find their own their customers.
Absolutely.
In a way, this is very similar to AdWords, because AdWords was based on online intent, where you're typing an intent. Ground Truth Marketplace is based on offline intent. To drive more store traffic into offline businesses, brick and mortar businesses.
Yeah, and there's a lot there that I want to sink our teeth into in this discussion, including some of the differentiators and the dynamics of location intelligence. I love the metaphor to AdWords and user intent, but of course it's user intent with a much larger pie in terms of where commerce is happening offline and locally. So I think that's something that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about. But first, one thing that we like to do on this show, and you alluded to this a bit, is find out more about founder stories. And you know, we have a lot of kind of startup entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs that listen to this show, and they're always eager to hear about kind of interesting founding stories. So you mentioned VNable. I remember VNable and being a mobile analyst right around the time I started. You know, VNable was actually a close client, and that was in an SMS-based, feature phone-based world. And then you mentioned in the kind of pivoting and evolution to the other iterations of what became Ground Truth eventually through XAD. But tell us a little more about the founding story in terms of the idea at the time, the inception, the drivers, and some of the goals of VNable at the time.
Look, you know, first of all, I always had interest in data and technology.
Mm.
And, you know, we're talking 99, 2000. And if you remember, the phones used to be very, very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And the data bandwidth that we're talking wasn't really there. And so you're trying to kind of access a lot of content on a very small phone. And first, the data is not available. And then typing is really, really hard. So we were really trying to solve the problem that, hey, how do we really make it easy? The only way to make it easy, if you can really build a solution where you don't have to type anything, you can navigate content by speaking into it. So that's how the We Enable was started, in 2000. I moved to San Diego right after graduation and joined other co-founders over there. And, fast forward, it was a little bit too early for the market just because the technology infrastructure required to build that kind of solution early 2000 wasn't really there. We were pretty successful, actually. Our solution was sitting in the Verizon. We also launched on Sprint phones. But just the business model, our capability to charge enough to kind of serve, run our business wasn't really there. So that kind of, led me to, a different path. And also the important thing is the experience of really understanding mobile. And as location data was kind of scaling, that helped us kind of create Ground Truth in 2009. So that experience was really great. Just understanding, it's not just about technology. Time to market is very important. The business model that is viable is very important.
Yeah, that's interesting history too. And it reminds me too, you mentioned San Diego. I remember in those days, some of the kind of early executives at the company, your former colleagues that I spent a lot of time with, like Craig Hagopian and Colin Holmes, who I believe are still planted some in that San Diego area. But that also reminds me, what was behind the story of the eventual move to New York when XAD transplanted and rebranded and ended up in New York as a headquarters?
So I think the first thing when we were in San Diego in 2007 and our company was about, I would say 75 people, We Enable. And that year was the third year in a row we won Technology of the Year award in San Diego. So I thought to myself, this is not a great place to be. If We Enable is the only company that's winning these awards and we're not doing so well from a business standpoint, I think I'm in the wrong place.
It's a small pond, the big fish in a small pond theory.
So I decided, actually it was not 2007 or 2006, so I decided to move to San Francisco first. And then I was still working for We Enable, but I moved to San Francisco. And then, we kind of folded the company by 2008, so a couple of other founders joined me, so we had about four or five people that kind of came from the previous company. So the first change was really moving away from San Diego into Valley to really kind of have a more broader exposure of, what to look for when you're starting a business and all that. And that was really great. We started 2009 Ground Truth, which was XAD back then. And in 2010, we were profitable, very business focused. I think the timing that the mobile was growing, location was becoming available, all that was playing in our favor, and we had quite a bit of experience dealing with just mobile technologies, so we were able to kind of speed up everything. And then 2011, when we moved to New York, was really to kind of scale our sales efforts. We had to go and see brands, we have to go and see agencies,
sure.
And so our customers were there. So initial customers are more SMB customers. The DEX of the world, the Yellow Pages companies, and because they were looking to digitize their solutions. Mm-hmm. But then we said, hey, we got to go beyond them because these companies are dying. I don't want to make my customers, good to kind of start the company with them, but it's not a sustainable strategy. So in 2011 and 12, we made a move to New York. And then a year later, we made that as headquarters. Just because more global time zone is nice. A lot of our customers over there. So that's the story, essentially.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that kind of history lesson and that context. So with that aside, let's kind of drill down a little bit deeper on the present. So you mentioned at the front end some kind of high level explanations of Ground Truth. It's kind of mission and differentiators. So let's talk a little bit more about kind of that value proposition and points of differentiation, particularly in the light of the kind of saturation we've seen and location intelligence firms in the past decade, or especially in the last 5 years, some of whom don't really live up to the promise of location data precision or insight. So what are some of the points of differentiation that you point to for Ground Truth, whether that be data collection methodology or philosophy or approach or what you're measuring? What are some of the things that you normally point to?
Look, I think just from a value creation standpoint, you know, we're really kind of bringing something very incremental to the market. If you think about, a consumer just walking into a store, that relationship of that store and the consumer is not available digitally today. In online world, it is available, but, you know, if you are just walking to Taco Bell and, you know, making a purchase there, that purchase data is either sitting with just Taco Bell or sitting with credit card companies.
Yep.
And it cannot be used, it cannot be made available in a digital way. So we're bringing that incrementality of, you know, that person and their relationship with that store, first of all. So that's why the market is getting created, essentially. In terms of, there are a lot of use cases. You can use it to drive, and we'll talk more on that, to drive kind of traffic or to understand the communities and localities and neighborhood. Where we like to kind of focus on from a differentiation standpoint is really two things. One is accuracy, and the second is trust.
Okay.
I think the company, since we started in 2009, has kind of focused a lot on accuracy. And because what we realized early on that this is not just about building a mechanism to process large amount of GPS data.
Yep.
We also realized in 2010, the first challenge was there is really no company that provides you accurate business boundaries so that you can take in and just kind of create right context for that consumer that where they're visiting. Because most of the companies back then, you know, mapping was used to drive you to a new store and you don't have to really know what are the boundaries of the store. But if you want to really figure out if you are going to a store, you really need to understand the boundaries of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So what we ended up doing was at that moment, okay, we're not going to wait for the market to kind of do something and, you know, give us that precise boundaries. We actually end up building a solution that will allow us to kind of build that boundaries ourselves. So we built the software, we gave it to 200 people, and then we built a verification mechanism on top of that. It was done in some semi-automated fashion, and we were able to quickly build that boundary data in a matter of, you know, a couple of years. And now today we have about 6 million businesses where we have accurate boundary data. Initially started with, you know, manually, but then we also built a more crowdsource approach where, mm-hmm. you know, anybody can log in from any country and they can just go and create a map. And then we will verify the map. If the map is verified, we will pay them a price essentially.
Hmm.
So that's how we're scaling that today, which also allowed us to kind of go into new markets. So if we have to go to, you know, Australia, we have to go to Brazil, the first thing we do is we, you know, go and create those business boundaries essentially in that market. So that's really, really important for us. And then the second part right on the accuracy was more around, we also learned that the listings information wasn't really accurate. You know, a lot of the listing database was accurate, but owned by Google and Microsoft, and they don't really give you the right information
yep.
back to you. So we had, and then companies like other companies were giving incorrect open hours and the stores were getting closed and we just didn't want to kind of build a solution that is built on incorrect data. So for the top brands, you know, we end up building our own data set. We want to make sure that it's like 99% accurate because if you are visiting a store in the nighttime, you're really not visiting the store, you're just kind of passing by. So early on, the company's culture was really built on, you know, building a more accurate product. And that's also really driving a lot of our products today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the offline to online challenge and connecting those dots is very valuable. You've also achieved scale and network effect. And then the two points you brought up, which of course are trust and accuracy. So we want to dig in a little bit deeper on those. But first, we're going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Sunil. Hello, everyone. This is Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Brandify, which is Street Fight's parent company. It's a local marketing company that provides a range of services for brands with brick-and-mortar store locations. So that's everything from retail stores to restaurants and moving companies and banks and healthcare providers and several other verticals. And Brandify manages the digital outposts where most consumers encounter these businesses today. So we're talking Google Maps and Facebook, Yelp, Apple Maps, and Bing. And the name of the game is really to create a compelling presence on these sites and apps and to engage with consumers more effectively using advanced reputation management tools. And this is all really compelled by the fact that 97% of consumers regularly search online for local businesses. So brands today can't afford to be missing from all those channels or lack multimedia content or contact information or visible responses to customer feedback. So Brandify synthesizes and optimizes all these channels through a local marketing platform. And it's all about standing out and winning the loyalty and lifetime value of tech-savvy consumers. So to learn more, visit Brandify.com. So we're back. My guest is Sunil Kumar. So Sunil, before the break, we were talking about Ground Truth's model, its goals and its values, how it's kind of devised a product model. So now let's kind of go one level deeper and kind of paint that picture by giving some examples of the customers you work with and how you serve them. In other words, where does Ground Truth kind of sit in the value chain in terms of the types of entities it works with and what it does for them? You mentioned advertisers and agencies before. So what does that kind of picture look like?
Look, I think before I talk about that, I just want to kind of when we go to a customer, you know, how do we really kind of acquire them? I think it's very important part of what we do. You know, so example I like to always give is I live in Burlingame, California, and then you know there's a pizza place over there, and if I have to acquire the pizza place as a customer, you know, first thing I go and do is hey, pizza owner, you know, looks like, you know, you are in Burlingame, California, and we know there are 28,000 people living in Burlingame, and I know that 10,000 of them go to a pizza place, and you get 800 out of the 10,000 at your store in a month. And then that may be okay for them. He may not have any capacity to take any more, but that's the kind of insight that we start with. And then here are the solutions that will kind of can help you increase your 800 to 850 or 900. These are the strategies that we offer you. So we always start with something really, really at a very, very local level that our customers can really immediately can understand that this is really, really accurate information.
Yeah.
Because if you are a pizza owner, you know that where you stand in that market, and then someone telling you that information and providing you strategies, and then be able to kind of take that 800 out of 10,000 to 850 or 900, is great value proposition.
It also calibrates the trust that you were referring to earlier.
Absolutely. And along with that, we also provide them, this is all available, you know, like a pre-sales process you can think about. This is all available to them, their nearest competitors, the overall category. So they can see, okay, this guy is doing 1,200, I'm doing this. It's very, very, so they can also start building the trust that, oh, this data actually is accurate because I can visually go and see that my place is, you know, not as busy as some other place, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so when we start from that, we don't really differentiate between, you know, mid-market customers or brands. We really kind of go after brick-and-mortar customers and really in locality. You know, chances that you're living in a neighborhood, you know, you're going to go out of the neighborhood to do something is very, very small, unless it's a one-time thing, like you're buying a car or, you know, you're going to Home Depot, where most of the time you're kind of operating within your strike zone or trade zone. So what we really focus on is we support all mid-market SMB customers, and we also support larger brands because they have presence in those locality. The smaller customers, we like to support them through a self-serve model. So it's a platform we launched in 2017. Right now we have about 5,000 small, medium businesses using that platform in self-serve capacity, understanding, you know, where they stand in their market, and then trying to kind of drive more traffic. Mm. For larger brands like Taco Bell, McDonald's, Home Depot, they're also operating in that locality. And we really typically work with agencies because that's how they operate. That's their business model, essentially.
Yeah. Now, building from that, what are the things that you're measuring that prove value in the value that you're kind of providing to some of these customers? And that could be a function of, where they want to see value grow. But what are the KPIs? I mean, are you looking for revenue lift, foot traffic? And as a corollary to that, do you have any kind of just mini case studies or even just figures to suggest that the value you're providing is quantifiable?
Yes, absolutely. So look, I think the one value proposition that we have is driving store traffic for all brick and mortar stores. And but proving that that value is accurate is kind of different for a small medium business versus a larger brand. And so we built two different solutions essentially over there. For a smaller brand, the verification is very, very easy. They're typically getting 10 customers a day, and they start getting 12, they can just eyeball them, and they can, and so that's really, really great, which is why we target their segment, because verification that the value is being given is very obvious and easily measured. And they don't want any complex technologies to kind of prove to them that the value is going on. We also have done some tests with these mid-market customers where they have shared sales data, so there is a correlation between, as in previous example, as our 800 becomes 850, their sales numbers also increasing essentially. And it's very easy to do with a smaller set of smaller customers.
So it's a
With larger customers,
time-based delta.
yes. And with larger customers, I think the value is still there, but I think because they operate thousands of stores and we have to kind of rely on some sophisticated mechanisms. So AB framework, we're really talking about incremental users. Not just incremental users, but also incremental visits. So that's not just given to them in form of a report. And we have to really go and build technology. And sometimes we build it, and also we also use some third party because love some of these larger brands are using third party verification. So they kind of use our platform to drive traffic, but then they verify it from third platforms, which SMBs don't do. And SMBs just say, hey, looks like it's working.
Yeah, and SMBs probably won't have the time to read the reports either, in addition to, the reasons you mentioned. So that makes sense. And that's actually great that you hit all of those different kind of demand levels throughout the marketplace at those different kind of segments. Now, beyond some of those segments in terms of business size, let's talk about vertical segmentation. So are there typical product classes or business verticals that you feel are better map to kind of the location intelligence that and data that you provide, or is it a fairly horizontal solution?
No, I think we started with brick and mortar as a target, so a lot of retailer, QSR are really our early clients. But then, if you think about the way we measure our businesses, we have today about 150 million users or profiles in our platform globally. So we know that what they do, which brands they visit, what are their interests based on their offline traffic, based on their offline behavior. So CPG companies, it's not only retailers who are interested in driving traffic, it's also CPG companies that wanted to sell their product and in those stores. And historically, they have to buy shelf space in those retailers. Now their shelf space is really digital screen in front of those 150 million profiles. So if you want to sell a product on Saturday, you don't have to wait for the consumer to come to the store on Saturday. You know that okay, this customer is likely going to buy my product, and I can target that customer on Wednesday, and that becomes a digital shelf for their CPG company. So we're having a lot of success using those kind of strategies. And it's not just CPG companies. We're actually now starting to go into e-commerce vertical as well. Think about you're opening an online grocery store that is organic and there's no storefront. But really what you're going to go after is people who go to Whole Foods, people who are going to farmers market. And so you're really using our platform to target the audience, but there is no store traffic, and the result is going to happen on the e-commerce side. So we're seeing that those kind of clients coming to us, Casper, is also, even though they have store traffic, a lot of their transactions are happening online. we think about airline, private airline companies, they're trying to kind of target customers who are traveling a lot, San Francisco to LA a couple times a week. And we can tell them that who are really traveling a couple times a week and could be the right target for you to kind of make them your customer, and layer any kind of neighborhood information to ensure that they have, you know, they have means to kind of pay for such a service and so on. So the use cases that we are talking today are more retail focused, but we're growing to CPG, e-commerce, and those are all the expansion areas.
Yeah, that makes sense. And beyond kind of vertical segmentation, what about kind of functional segmentation? And you definitely alluded to this in different use cases, because a lot of location intelligence traditionally has been used for customer acquisition, as we've been talking about, in a marketing context or in a marketing attribution context. But, you know, over the last 5 years or so, led by GroundTruth and others, we're starting to see other interesting use cases for location intelligence that goes beyond marketing. So, for example, you know, you alluded to this franchise development. So knowing where to open your next store based on the intelligence of where you might over-index for affinity groups but under-index for presence, or other, you know, functions such as, you know, we live in such a big data world, logistics and supply chain optimization. And, you know, we've even heard about things like equity analysts using location data to predict upcoming quarterly earnings based on foot traffic patterns. So this overall concept of location intelligence is starting to have a life far beyond its original use in kind of marketing and customer acquisition. So what are some of those areas that you are kind of diving into or have dived into or excited about kind of expansion?
Yeah, now you're talking about our future strategy. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think everything that you mentioned are really great use cases, but we like to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. I think our vision is really create use cases that make, you know, experience in a locality much better. You know, we're really at the early, maybe the second inning of location right now. Location can really be used to understand neighborhoods faster than, you know, sensors would report. So if think about, you know, people are changing their locations, places are getting gentrified, there's something changing in your lifestyle, you're raising a family, you want to move to a new location. A lot of that change can be very easily identified through location. And that information could be given back to the residents or people so they can make better decisions in their lifestyle. You know, if you want to move to a neighborhood, obviously you are moving there because you love that neighborhood. But within that neighborhood, which block, you know, if you go to this block and maybe the traffic patterns in that block are not really good for raising a family. So somehow if we, our company can bring that data that we're getting from consumers back to them in a fashion that improves their experience in living in a locality, not just from an advertising standpoint, but a lot of other different ways. That's really the direction kind of, you know, we're also kind of building solution. The other areas that we are exploring are just kind of helping brands build better engagement with their customers. So Nike is my favorite example. You know, you go and buy a shoe from Nike, and Nike knows that you bought the shoe and what kind of shoe you bought, but Nike has no idea that what you're doing with the shoe. Are you running a couple times a month? Are you going to the gym? Or are you just sitting at home? And that kind of information is very, very useful for Nike to engage with their customer, not really from a, I guess, advertising standpoint, but more from a retention standpoint and building their new business, essentially.
Yeah. And that's very interesting in the kind of neighborhood scouting use case you mentioned, because that interestingly would bring GroundTruth to extend to a consumer facing play, which would seem to be an interesting like diversification move from a business perspective. And another one I just thought of too was, you know, we're entering an election cycle. Do you believe that location intelligence can be used to do things like predict election outcomes based on either demographic information or foot traffic patterns and voting, stuff like that?
I mean, it can, but we're not going in that direction. Okay. We're trying to kind of make the experience of somehow, you know, today we serve to merchants in a locality.
Sure.
And we want to serve to consumers living in that locality. We will likely not directly becoming a consumer company.
Sure.
But more through partnerships, you know, real estate companies, you have Trulia, Redfin, Nextdoor.
Sure. And, those that have already aggregated audiences.
Exactly.
Okay, so before we pause for another commercial break and then go to our lightning round, what are you most excited about, or what are you working on now that we can expect from Ground Truth in 2020?
Look, I think we are in planning mode for 2020, and the outlook pretty good. We have a couple initiatives. One of the big initiative is, how do we really go beyond mobile? And we started that initiative this year. So although the location data comes from mobile, but once you understand the profile of the customer, you can target that customer on desktop, streaming TV, radio, anywhere. So we just recently launched desktop as well. Now from our platform, our customers can not only reach the right audience on mobile, but they can also reach on desktop. So we're able to connect that. Next year, we're going to start scaling that, but we're also going to add streaming TV, radio, and so on.
Ah.
We're also in process of really building a more simpler solution for SMBs. So the solution that I explained to you is kind of more for the mid-market customers in a locality. So we're trying to kind of target now S, which is the small of SMB.
Ah, yep.
And then build something even more simpler, more like a subscription solution that they don't have to do much, and to just capture the millions of SMB that are out there, essentially.
Yeah.
So some of those areas, just going beyond mobile and continue to kind of develop solutions for to get more of this SMB segment are some key priorities for us.
Yeah, those are very interesting growth areas. The long tail of SMBs, or what some people refer to as VSMB, very small SMBs. And then
Right.
also the streaming angle is interesting too, given the just consumer growth in streaming year over year. So we'll be looking out for those things. So that's actually all the time we have. I want to thank you, Sunil, for spending time with us.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks, Mike. This was really wonderful.
Yeah, this was
Really
fun.
exciting.
Yeah, and thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.